Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
Remember, this is free to watch for 48 hours, or if you want to own it, you can purchase it using the link in the chat. Our speakers today are Ayelet Natan, her pronouns are she, her. She is a therapist, lecturer, and facilitator in the field of queer embodiment, LGBTQ embodiment, founder of Agam Center for Queer Embodiment and LGBTQ Positive Sexuality. We also have Lee Harrington. His pronouns are he, him. Lee Harrington is an internationally known sexuality, relationships, and personal authenticity educator and author of the books Traversing Gender, Understanding Transgender Realities, and Sacred Kink, The Eightfold Paths of BDSM and Beyond, amongst many other titles. We also have Ayo Gray Jonassen, their pronouns are they, them, co-founder of Skinship Berlin, a touch-based place for kinship, sexological bodyworker and facilitator of embodied intimacy for queer people, and Dr. Robert Allen, his pronouns are he, him. He maintains a private practice in Denver, and his research work has explored cultural adaptations of EFT and exploring the impact of minority stress. He is currently the co-principal investigator and supervising the Denver site for the first clinical trial of emotionally focused individual therapy. They will be presenting a lively and broad-reaching panel discussion on LGBTQ relating intimacy and sexuality in relation to gender and queerness, sexual orientation, trauma, oppression, exclusion, pride, empowerment, and the importance of safe spaces for the LGBTQ community. Please welcome them and please share your wisdom with us. We have decided that I will present some questions. So the first question is, what to you is the importance of this panel? A panel specifically about LGBTQ intimacy, sexuality, and relating. Take it away.
All right, no one else is hopping up, so I'm gonna go ahead and take this opportunity to say I am delighted that the Embodiment Conference is putting queer programming, and explicitly queer programming, on the schedule to say that voices of ours matter. Right? We have people tuning in from around the world, many places that being LGBTQ or something else is illegal, is something that you can be imprisoned for, killed for. And so to me, having these spaces is hugely empowering and allows us therefore to be embodied rather than being in fear and in shadow.
Exactly, and I jump in and say that for me, this is the main reason for being in this panel and helping creating this panel, because there is a huge lack of safe spaces for our community. There is a huge misunderstanding of our embodied experience, which is different. It is the same in some aspects, but in a lot of aspects, it is different. And we lack safe spaces to explore ourselves through and with our body, and to explore our sexuality, to explore our relations when it comes to the embodied experience. In Israel, there is almost none, There is not much representation, there is no visibility. And also, I see it both sides. I want to bring the LGBTQ issue to the embodiment community to allow more safe spaces. And I want to bring the queerness to I want to bring embodiment to the LGBTQ community because there is power in both. I want to bring both communities together because there is power in both, in queerness, in our bodily experience of our LGBTQ-ness, and in the bodily experience, exploring ourselves, finding a home in the body. And we don't find a home in the body. A lot of people do not find a home in the body. And the body is a battlefield for a lot of people because it is so, the traumas are big. And also for me, it was very important to form a community because there is a lack of safe spaces. Then I am looking for a tribe of the LGBTQ therapists and facilitators to form a community so we can learn from each other, so we can support each other, so we can promote each other, bring up the visibility together, so we can act as a community.
Yeah, I want to continue with the I just want to highlight the importance of role models in this space, as I think that this embodied conference is somehow a sign of a movement right now, like a really important movement in the world. And LGBTQ people are part of that movement, of course we are. But at the same time, we need role models to see that embodiment, to become a body worker, to become a facilitator as a queer person, out and proud, is really important. And I think that's what drives my motivation for being here. It's like, I don't see that many people. I don't see people being openly with their gender and sexuality that differs from the norm. So just to see and meet other people is just really appreciated for me personally. So thank you for being here, everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll just build on what others said. It's so, you know, it strikes me how much we're disconnected from our bodies as queer people. We're legislated away from our bodies. We're policied away from our bodies. We're messaged away from our bodies. We enter adulthood literally with millions of messages saying, do not connect to your body and do not connect to your feeling. And even if we don't get any messages, we don't get the millions of messages that say, and this is how you connect to those queer feelings, to that queer body, to those queer thoughts. So it is just so, so, so critical for our survival, for our well-being, for our health. We're hated for connecting to our bodies. I think about just yesterday, I believe it was the Texas Social Work Association passed a resolution saying that Texas social workers can choose not to work with LGBTQ and disabled people. And, you know, when I get that message, you know, I get that feeling in the pit of my stomach of like, great, here's another message about why we can exclude, why we can hate, why we can legislate queer people in a way that's actually quite harmful.
And that legal piece gets added on top of the fact that for a lot of, especially men who love men, being told our bodies are toxic, being told that having sex and being sensual with lovers or friends leads to death because of the AIDS crisis that is still affecting communities, not just men who love men, but the message was passed down politically, socially, et cetera, to those communities beyond the actual effects of the virus.
And also, you were talking about, Robert, you were talking about the disconnection from our body. And yeah, I agree. And I also think that specifically a panel about sexuality is that all sexuality is embodied, but our embodied sexuality is very complex, full of traumas, and also very complex. And our embodied experience is sexual of sexuality almost directly, even when it comes to gender. It's all about our sexuality. It's all about what we do in bed. All our experience of life. So our embodiment is full of our sexuality. And when it comes to embodiment, what I love is that embodiment allows us to make the bridges between the experiences, because I can take from the personal or the subcultural of our community to the universal. And when I take straight or cis people through a bodily experience of whatever topic in LGBTQ experience, then they understand more through the bodily experience, and then they understand through the whole levels, not just in words. It's more beneficial than talking, and we do the talking so much. We do the talking. And the embodied experience, or trying to embodily expand our sexuality, will help us more bring people into our shoes. And then the understanding will get bigger. It's a deeper understanding.
I'd like to add something about the question of the importance of this panel, that I think it's very important. It's very empowering. I mean, a lot of times we connect LGBTQ with crisis, with trauma, with just like the story that you told us, Robert, which is horrifying. But at the same time, I think that LGBTQ is a very, we have a gift to humanity. We have healing qualities in our queerness. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about that as well.
Yeah, I can catch up on that, because I think that I was thinking about some of those questions beforehand, of course. And one of the things that I think of when I think of doing a workshop for queer people, like exclusively to create a space where we are only queer people, that in itself can be a very healing experience, because yeah, I think it's really complex to actually find out what is the mechanisms alive in us growing up with being a minority, you know, either being invisible or being having to justify yourself, not being understood, or always listening to gender and sexuality as something else than you yourself, like in the normality. So just being in a room of queer people where you are no longer having to justify yourself, that in itself can be a super healing, amazing experience. And I would even take it further from that to say that when queer people are a minority, I also experiencing, or not even that, but I experience that everyone get more space to be themselves, actually, because no one is, dualistic. No one is either or. No, I believe that everyone is super complex, super nuanced. Everyone is individual. So when there's people around that give more space, questioning all the time, you know, the norms of what is the right this and what is the wrong this, like when we question those norms, I think that everyone gets more space to to question themselves and to actually say, hey, I feel also something in me that sometimes that is difficult to live up to being a man, being a woman, being heterosexual, being homosexual, being, you know, there's so many norms connected to everything of labels. So I really think that the queerness has healing power in itself, just being present. Yeah.
I like that a lot, Ayo. It's sort of like I don't know. Some folks I know make the joke about, you know, when people want to get into the language of, you know, why would you choose to transition or why would you choose to be gay? And it's kind of like, yeah, if I had a choice, I'm not sure I'd pick the most difficult one. And that there, so that we have to find our ways through just an enormously complex range of challenges means that we have a lot to offer in terms of embodiment. There's tremendous strength there. You're muted, Lee.
Thank you. It's interesting that you bring up this notion of why would you choose the hardest path? Because in some parts of the transgender community, for folks who don't know, I was assigned female at birth. And so there's this concept of gender dysphoria, right? That disconnect between body and identity and looking in the mirror and having these heart aching experiences. Right, which a lot of people experience dysphoria who aren't transgender, right? Where the body and the mirror and the brain don't have differences of opinion. And there's another term though that I've fallen in love with over the last 5 years, which is gender euphoria. That moment of beauty that comes when someone else sees you in the fullness of who you are, or you get to see yourself in the fullness of who you are. And I've loved seeing transgender and non-binary people bringing the gift of that concept to the world, because for people who are cisgender, which means identity is same as you were assigned at birth, that's all cis mean. It means same in Latin. And so for cisgender people to also be given that queer gift, that trans gift of what's it like to be seen as the person you are, instead of the projection you were told by your parents, by your school, by a magazine. And I think if, you know, you bring up that idea, Maran, of the notion of what's the beauty out of this? I think that for me, that's part of it, is the idea that we can take this notion of fear and transmute it into gold of hope and possibility. Through being ourselves, right? In our skin suits, in our bodies, because that's where the work takes place, is here, not just here.
By the way, Florence here is asking, what does queerness mean? Does anybody want to explain it?
So we have like 10 hours.
let's take 2 minutes, okay?
Who wants to take the challenge?
I've got a PowerPoint slide. Give me just.
Oh, we're not trying to laugh at anyone. It's just very complex.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that the queerness can mean many things. I think it can mean the differences from the normality. Everything that differs from normality. It can mean the LGBTQ, traditionally LGBTQ, like it's an umbrella for some people, it's an umbrella term. For some people, it's an identity. It can be many things. And I think the term has, you know, developed through years a lot, yeah. Just to give that a bit of space, yeah.
Definitely, and I think it has both personal meanings and political meanings, and it changes through time and it develops and it expands. And for me, queerness means basically the big perception of the non-binary, of things are not either that or that, everything is a spectrum. There is, I think, levels of different queerness. Some queers, we believe that there are no edges at all. Everything is all between. Some of them will say there are edges, for example, male and female, it's there, but it's also open to movement. And basically everything is in the middle. And this is why queerness for me is freedom, because, and again, it comes to accepting and celebrating my queerness, because as much as I am attached to my queerness, to all my, I can explore all my sides. This is also for straight and cis people. This is the healing. We explore a very wide range of gender identities, of sexual orientation. We move a lot. And as much as we are healed, we have the freedom to move in our queerness. It's not only freedom. Sometimes it's very much lack of freedom. It's exactly the same. But once we are there, then, and it's very empowering and it's expanding. So for me, this is queerness.
Can I add to that, Amor?
Then we'll move on to the next question.
Okay, great. And so, I mean, the other thing, I love it in terms of the expansion, that there's a greater embracing of it. I think that that continues to evolve. And then I'm always sort of like conscious of, like you said, that there's a sense of expansion and there's a sense of the opposite as well. And so I'm always like conscious a little bit in talking about it of how do we kind of pay attention to, you know, because people can kind of identify with, rightly so, queerness, and how do we continue to pay attention to, and what are their experiences out in the world? Like, how are their bodies impacted by how others perceive them, by legislation, by policies, so that it doesn't become this kind of like amorphous, like, oh, it's just everyone's queer and you know, that's all, it's the same for everyone all the time. It's not the same for everyone all the time.
Thank you for that. So the next question that I would like to present to you guys, what are the different aspects of LGBTQ intimacy, sexuality, and relating that are different from those of straight and cisgender people or relationships, exactly following up on what you were just saying, Robert? And how do you deal with these aspects in your work?
I think for me, one of the things I've looked at is, if there's no models of this is what your sexuality looks like, it hasn't been in romantic comedies, it hasn't been in like day-to-day pornography, there's a permission to explore your bodies and what sexuality looks like sometimes. If there's no guidebook, I can see if this feels good or if that feels good, to explore the authenticity of my skin desires, I think is one of the things that for me comes up with how this manifests for queer people sometimes differently than for cisgender people when it comes to sexual activities and orientation.
Yeah, I think one of the main things I can think of is to, when we talk about embodiment and embodied healing or processes, I think there is a state of presence, of awareness in one's body, that is also helped by relational interaction with a therapist, with a facilitator, whatever. And what I do in my work to find that level of growth, I think that it's really important that queer people are sometimes healing with other queer people or finding safe space to do it, because when we are in mainly heterosexual cis spaces, we can experience that we have to justify ourselves or explain what does this mean, what does that mean, how does it feel to have your gender identity, what do you mean by having that sexuality, and all those questions is all the time based on someone else is getting schooled in a way, you know, getting the information about what are you, how are you doing that in your life, and I don't believe that healing can happen in that space where you have to justify or explain yourself. Healing and processes happens when someone see you and you feel seen and heard and understood. And I think that I think all queer people, everyone who has experienced being minority in gender and sexuality has that level of, has a certain, integrated some certain challenges in their lives, doing life. And that's just something very specific for us as queer people. And I think that's some of the, that's some of the differences I can think of, is that those spaces, like with more straight people, you have to justify, like explain yourself. And if you find yourself in spaces where there's many people who knows, kind of have similar lived experiences, then you don't have to justify yourself and you can like relax or find yourself in a different level, basically embodied.
That was beautiful, Ayo. I just, like, I literally just took a breath as I was listening to you. That was so, so lovely. And right on. I work through an attachment lens, and so more on the relating part. I mean, our relationships are so critical. They're critical for everyone. We all need to be connected. But we, you know, our relationships are critical. We need a safe place to be with other people, and that's important. Some of the differences I think about from an attachment perspective is sometimes we sort of, and there's a bit of research that it kind of suggests that people who pursue open relationships, consensual non-monogamy, polyamory, are avoidant, and it's just not true for gay men. There's a broader range of relationships that are available, and they come at it from a secure perspective, and that we can talk about and explore relationships in more ways, including monogamy, but in more ways, I think is really important. And that our peers are really important. You know, from an attachment perspective, we often talk about our early life experiences and family of origin, but coming out and peers actually have a significant impact on attachment narratives as well. So that's the other thing in relating that I would mention is important for queer folks as well.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. I mean, there's so many different things. I think people don't really realize how our sexuality and our embodied experience, again, can be so different. There are a lot of things. I was writing down topics, and the list is long in how much is different. And again, yeah, we do not have safe spaces. And I created this thing because in Israel we have nothing. In abroad, it's much, much better. And I can see now that it is not much better. Our sexuality is very wounded. It's very suppressed. Our attachment to the body is very disconnected, and we simply do not have safe spaces. And this is a main difference, because other people, they have a lot of safe spaces. Whatever you want to explore now, you can go explore. Unless you are LGBTQ or other minorities. I'm not, we just cannot go explore, heal, find rest, find home, and find a tribe, find people who understand us, who understand us, who are our kin. We have different collective intergenerational, how would you say that? It is different. We carry Stoneville and the whole story of LGBTQ. We have collective, other different collective traumas. We have our relations are different. A relationship between two women and non-binary people, folks and two gay men is very different than straight and cis one. It's just different. So many things, really. So many things. And it seems sometimes that people just don't get it. They don't get the importance of safe spaces. They don't get the importance of healing our sexual and embodied traumas. They don't get the importance of visibility. And recognition. And we deal, I think, also the intensity of our experience is very, very high, very high. For example, I take the closet a lot as an example. All people have a secret, and therefore all people experience a closet, an embodied experience of a closet. But the intensity of our closets is, it's none to compare. It's a small example. And having relationships, for example, in a closet, that is totally different. Trying to relate to each other, hiding, do it in hiding, do it in shame, trying to relate to each other, trying to bring intimacy when the world is pretty cold out there sometimes. But I think also it does the opposite. It brings us together. And again, you were talking about our kin. We have communities. We have a lot of communities. And so we want to also take advantage of the fact that we are communities in order to create our safe spaces. And it will have to go between inclusion and exclusion. I think generally what we need is exclusion, our own spaces. Together with teaching our experience to straight cis folks. And then we can do the inclusion, only then, when we feel safe enough.
Yeah, I can put a bit on top of that with communities, I think, because I, from my experience, there is a certain, there is an experience in where I am in this community where I am, where you know, we have all been, as queer people, we have all been through a journey where shame around body, gender, sexualities, somehow is something we can talk about and we can mirror each other. We, none of us have the same experience, of course, but that's kind of a background. And I think some of that is also our strength, you know, it's also our resources, it's also how we come together. And we also have a collective, at least when we do find communities and have network and friends, we do actually also have a collective experience of turning the shame into pride. Yes. And I think that journey is super beautiful, and I think it's very needed and important. And that's why practical, like physical spaces are so needed and valued, because we need to meet, like, we need to meet other people, you know. So yeah, I just want to thank you for saying that we need spaces. I just agree with that totally. Yeah.
May I address the question that just got brought up in chat around if we're looking for our own spaces, why do trans women insist, the word in there is insist in the question, on being in women's spaces? I'm just hoping to throw out a couple of definitions. Trans is an adjective. So a trans woman is a woman who happens to be transgender in the same way somebody might be tall, right? That doesn't make a tall woman or a short woman any less of a woman. It's a descriptor. And people sometimes confuse transgender women with gayness. Transgender is about your identity and body. It's what the journey your body went on and the journey your identity went on, as compared to, say, being homosexual or being bisexual, queer. Well, not queer. Queer is a complex one, which are about who you're attracted to and who you want to be with. So I just wanted to break that down. Okay. I'm going to disengage then, Kim, from that, or I shouldn't have, but anyway, I'm going to disengage them from that chat. There's a person who in the chat doesn't believe that trans women are women. So I will let that difference of the existence of my own journey and that I shouldn't have my own spaces, I will step back from it. Thank you. Sorry about that.
I would like to address another question that has come up more than once. Any advice how to be more embodied when you have gender dysphoria? And once again, just like Lee said, gender is who I am, not who I am attracted to. And some of us have gender dysphoria. By the way, this is not just trans people. A lot of cisgendered people also have body dysphoria about their chest, about their weight, about so many things, hairiness. So how does embodiment help us when we have that dysphoria around our gender?
Yeah, I think that is a very interesting question. And I think there's no simple answer to that, to be honest. There's no cure, I would say. but I do think that there is a lot of, again, I think there is a lot of power in confronting shame, because I think dysphoria, it's not only shame, but it's a part of that, I would say. And what shame doesn't like from deepest within, what shame doesn't like is to be put in the light, because shame only exists when it's in the dark, when it's in the closet, when it's not being said, when it's not visible, so putting light on what we are ashamed of, often the shame will go away, especially if we do it together with other people. I really believe that all healing is done in interconnectedness with other human beings or animals and plants and species. but yeah, I think that a part of many people's dysphoria is a part of the feeling of shame, like somewhere in there, and to talk about it as that can be for some people a way forward.
All right, thank you for that. And now I'd like to present another question. Where are we today when it comes to LGBTQ intimacy, sexuality, and relating, especially concerning the coronavirus? What changes did you see also in the last few years, and how do you see the future in this field? So should I break it down, or was it like really big?
It's big. What comes up for me when you ask that question, it goes back to the notion of safe spaces. I'm involved with the gay men's community, and watching the shift in people making really hard choices around pickup culture, right? Websites like Grindr, websites that are like Recon, of people trying to connect with each other, whether it's in that shadow you speak of or in the light. And if you can't have access to those tools and how you connect, right? Or having bathhouses be closed down for pure safety and health reasons, suddenly there's men who love men who have nowhere to turn to because that was the space they went to be sensual with other men when they didn't feel safe telling anyone else in their life for fear of losing their church, losing their children, et cetera. So for me, I'm watching Corona have a lot of interesting effects, and it'll be interesting to see what comes out of it. I don't know yet, but I'm excited to see possibility grow. I met a man who he and another man had been flirting online, and they quarantined for 2 weeks, played for one beautiful weekend and were present with each other, and then did it again because touch and being present matters so much that they loved each other in that way, even if it wasn't going to be a long-term relationship.
Beautiful. I would say that in the present, I see, again, a lack of safe spaces, but also hope. I think the wheel has started rolling, and COVID, like for all people, made it very hard to meet. The lack of touch, the lack of physical intimacy. But on the other hand, I think it really, really helps creating those safe spaces that we're talking about, because everything goes online. We have wonderful opportunities like this one to really bring it up. That's like a few steps to bring an LGBTQ topic into live workshops or sessions or whatever is a bit harder, because it's harder to bring the audience in the community. Again, people are not connected. They don't even know what it means. They're very scared. So, but the online allows us to reach more people. Oh my goddess. So many more people. It allows us to form more communities. It allows us to share more knowledge. It allows people to be in their safe space to explore. It allows us to, It allows us to connect in ways that we didn't before. It does not have the touch, and that's a major problem. But it does have the heart. It has the heart and it has the energy. So I think the coronavirus, the COVID-19 brings us more opportunities, and I see more hope. And also I wanted to say something about what changed. I think I see a shift in the community. It's widening because a lot of straight people explore their sexuality. So naturally a lot of them discover that they're not so straight anymore. And so the community is expanding. The community is actually getting bigger. A lot of people are finding their ways into the community. And I think that's another beautiful thing that changed lately. And of course, more acceptance, a little bit more acceptance, not everywhere, but a little bit more. And my vision for the future is this: to create safe spaces, to heal, to invite people to heal through the body, to find home in the body, and to really, and also when we bring our a deeper experience of other people, of our embodied experience of life, they understand us deeply, and then they accept us more. So So I think, again, these safe spaces and embodiment on LGBTQ sexuality will, as much as will it will go on, it will bring more acceptance in the straight communities. So I have a big vision. my vision is big. We have, you know, we were talking about, Robert, you're not in the messenger group, but we were talking about LGBTQ queer embodiment, the queer embodiment day.
Yes.
Forming community. Yeah.
Do any of you want to talk about maybe how Zoom is affecting the LGBTQ community and our relationships? I mean, that's a big one.
Can I stick with the question that you had? I wasn't sure if you want to go well.
Yeah, sure.
No, go ahead, Robert.
Okay. Just a general piece about shame. I don't want to speak to the specific question. It's not my lived experience, but in general, I think of shame, you know, the antidote to shame is empathy and connection. And so, you know, I think that that's really critical. There are so many, I mean, I'm old enough that I know that there's been many, many wonderful changes in the last few decades. And along with that, though, I think, you kind of get in touch with, like, we have an over 2,000-year-old history of oppression. And it feels like we can kind of dream, like, just on the edge of what we have. So I was really appreciating that, just the range of things that you're talking about. And the importance of, like, fundamentally, you know, our bodies have to be in a context that's safe. And there are huge changes that need to be made on that front. Huge changes that need to be made globally. I mean, I might be safe in my, one place, but I don't really feel any safer just because they're, beating people up in Russia after they respond to an online ad, an online cruising ad. Like, that doesn't make me feel safer in the world. It just is a reminder of how scary and the world is and how unsafe the world is. And I think there's a lot, maybe this is a good bridge, Maureen, as well, to Zoom. There's so much good to be said about what people can access online, information, experience. It's very critical for queer folks. You can do it privately. It just gives you access to stuff that I think is enormously helpful. At the same time, we know that the more people are connected online, the lonelier they are. So it's tricky, right? In terms of it's critical, it's useful, it's helpful, it creates community, it can do all those things, and it can leave people feeling incredibly lonely.
But also that this is the reality, right? With the COVID-19. I mean, it's the best. I think it's the best that humanity has. It's the best that we can get right now, Zoom, or whatever online app. Sometimes it's the best that we can get. And again, there's wonderful things that you can do in Zoom that you cannot do in live sessions, in person to person. And also, again, it connects people from all around the world. And here we are. That wouldn't have happened without. So yeah, there's pros and cons, of course, but. And also, and again, we want to take advantage of this. We have an opportunity to take advantage of this.
I've also been seeing in queer communities some really creative ways of using things like Zoom that are more embodied. I got to go to a queer play party, right? The idea of people coming together for a sensual evening. And they had everybody, the priestess who was leading it, had everybody put one hand up and the other where your eye could be seen, and everyone breathed together. I went to another gathering where it was people taking their cell phones outside and putting their toes in the dirt and connecting with goddess energy. And I'm seeing some of that creativity for finding space happening online by queer people, because there's been such a need for hundreds of years to find magical spaces and find places to be present in our bodies in the smallest of corners, right? It's finding sensual opportunities in, you know, parks, because it's the only place you have. And I think some of that creativity can be applied to what we're doing on the internet.
And also it changes, it has the potential to change, or it does change the online connection. It's much better than porn, for example. Generally speaking, Lee, you have a, you have.
I worked in the porn industry as a model before my gender transition. So I have different opinions based on that porn gets grouped into one thing. And I think there's opportunities, but it is a different discussion for a different time.
Yeah, I take it as an umbrella term to
yes.
Chelsea online.
We'll make another panel, I think, for that next time. Sounds like a good idea. Thank you. By the way, we have 2 minutes left. If Ayo, if you'd like also to include something of your own about this.
I'm thinking about Zoom and community and intimacy, and what I think is really threatened at the moment is for my personal work how I like to question this whole idea that intimacy is only connected to romantic relationships. And for people who doesn't have a partner, but also for people who have more than one partners, this is a really hard time. And I think that, who are more like connecting intimately with their friends, basically also, of course, it connects to everyone, but I think, I think monogamy and nuclear families are having a much, on the intimate level, a much easier time at the moment. And I think that can be a bit scary as a queer person who doesn't belong to those two categories, for example. It's like, I have a lot of grief connected to that, and I'm a bit scared that the times are not, COVID is going to continue for a long time, and those places for touch and intimacy in meeting new people in groups is not going to happen as much anymore. And I think it's really sad, to be honest. And I'm a bit afraid that we are slowly adjusting and kind of forgetting how that was. You know, like I'm already like, you know, adjusting a bit. And sometimes I'm reminded when I'm with a group of friends and three different people give me a massage and I'm like, oh my God, this is something I miss. And I get then I get that rush and I get tears in my eyes because it's connected to grief. It's connected to embodied emotion that this is something that I haven't had this whole year almost. Or so I just want to put it in that I do find it really challenging for touch and intimacy this time of COVID-19. And it's sad. It's just that. And I think we also need time and space for grieving about that, like to really, really feel into oh, I am in lack of touch. I am in lack of connection to other people. I fuck Zoom, you know, like really sometimes it's just too much and you need to establish another connection with yourself. And I think then go and find it, you know, like I think sometimes it's more healthy to actually find human connection than to be
definitely COVID. We have to wrap it up because we are right at the end. So I want to thank you all. Thank you, Eilat Natan, Lee Harrington, Ayo Gray, Jonathan, and Dr. Robert Allen. I invite you all to the next session in this channel with Miroslav Petrovic about the art of embodied teaching, speaking, and facilitating. Please join. We also have the coffee breaks in the community section of the website and the Facebook groups where you can connect with this awesome community, and the links will be now in the chat. Thanks again to our sponsor, Ilan Stefani, for making this possible. And of course, thank you to all of you who joined us and wrote and commented and asked questions. I'm very sorry that we didn't get a chance to answer all the questions. All the questions were great. I also welcome you to reach out and contact our wonderful presenters. We will give their links in the chat below, and you can contact them further for any questions that you have. The full content of the conference has now a 50% discount. By purchasing it, you'll get access to the learning lists for e-structure, the notes for quick reviews, audio recordings to listen to on the go, and of course the entire library for a lifetime. And you'll also be able to hear this wonderful panel again. If you're like me and need time to process and integrate, this is an amazing opportunity. You'll also be helping to make this accessible to everyone else that are watching it for free. And you'll be supporting the huge team that made this beautiful and crazy idea possible. We have 2 minutes left. I would like to ask you guys, in a sentence, what is your top tip on how to be embodied?
So my favorite thing in wintertime is going to the sauna and going into cold showers.
Okay, sauna and cold showers.
Do one thing a day that feels good in your skin, even if society says it's not what should feel good.
That's great.
I like outdoor and nature.
Yeah. I try to feel the... keep looking at the connections. I always say the way I feel my body, or I feel in my body, is the way I feel life. And the way I move my body or move in my body is the way I move in life. And so I just try to put that in mind and see, look all the time, look at the correlations. How I feel now in life, okay, how I feel in the body. How I feel in the body now. Okay, what does it mean about my life?
Well, thank you all for this wonderful panel and your wonderful tips, and just to having you exist. Thank you for being a community. And again, thank you everyone that was watching us. Thank you on Facebook as well. Enjoy the rest of the conference and have a great night, day, wherever you are in the world. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome
right.
job.
Wow.
In your day.
Thank you so much, Nicolas.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Such a delight. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that happened. Well done. Love it. Love it.
Thank you.